Welcome to Taking the Rams by the Horns, a podcast that takes current affairs out of current affairs. This is a podcast in partnership with Sowetan Live. I'm your host, Rams Mabote. South Africa is alive with possibilities. I mean, who would have imagined a former president in jail? A sitting president sleeping on cash, literally. A cabinet minister visiting a common prisoner in jail. Or even the post office operating, even when they have nothing to do.
Can you confirm that delivery performances dropped?
Welcome to the new Sowetan Live podcast called Taking the Rams by the Horns with me, Rams Mabote. Each week, I will be taking a lighter look at very serious topics that half the time drive you up the wall. This podcast will use humor to take no prisoners, have no holy cows, and cook a whole lot of sacrificial lambs. If you are a first-time listener of this podcast, I guess I must thank one Jimmy Manye, MP, for alerting you to this amazing content. As a member of parliament, this is most likely the only reason he should be called honorable. Stay in the room. You won't be disappointed. Disclaimer though, this week's episode is not funny. It's devoid of all satire and sarcasm. It is about a matter we don't tackle enough in South Africa. In 2018, Antonio Iyotso, the CEO of IUM Africa's leading independently owned cell captive managing general agent, has a near-death accident when he comes off a Ducati. Now, this word, I don't even know how to say it. Panigale, he'll tell me later. Superbike. At a breakneck speed racing around Cape Town's notoriously dangerous Kilani Motorway. Despite sustaining significant injuries, including a shattered T7 vertebra, 17 broken ribs, and punctured lungs, medical professionals are amazed that Antonio has not been paralyzed. Antonio undergoes a series of operations in both South Africa and the United States of America. Through his ordeal, he's prescribed Oxynorm, an opioid. By the way, I don't understand why they have spelled this drug in so many eyes, but I think it's opioid. It's a painkiller, which in the US, it has been linked to millions of overdose-related deaths. I'm grateful he's still here. No one in the medical fraternity warns Antonio of its highly addictive nature. And so, his five-year addiction nightmare unfolds. While managing a $600 million building project, launching a cutting-edge 5,000 square meter health and wellness facility, and overseeing his billion rand insurance enterprise, this highly driven businessman grapples with a dual existence. His once magnificent life, built from rags to riches, begins to unravel. He consumes copious amounts of opioid to manage his debilitating back pain, alternating it with even more addictive drugs to withdraw. Over time, Antonio finds it increasingly challenging to conceal his inner turmoil. He becomes fixated on the clock, obsessed with when he can take his next fix. Finally, in a mammoth surge of determination and willpower, Antonio goes to battle with the opioid dragon, resolved to win himself off every last milligram of the drug, and he finally slayed the dragon. And a month or so ago, he released a book, Slaying the Dragon, a South African billionaire's battle to conquer opioid addiction, where he details his heartbreaking journey, yet heartwarming success over drugs. He speaks about how he lied to his family and colleagues, how he lived a double life, and how he continued to be functional, even successful as a businessman, although inside, as a man, a father, a husband, and a boss, he was going through hell. Now, addiction is no laughing matter, and that is why this won't be a normal episode. Although we'll try to find lighter side of Antonio's story, this discussion is about a scourge that has destroyed and continues to destroy many, and I hope that listening to Antonio's story, at least one more person will be saved from addiction. Mr. Iyotso, thank you very much for coming in.
It's an absolute pleasure, Rams. Thank you for having me.
So I've heard in the last 3 weeks, been with you three times. at the launch, the bigger launch, then the launch to trade, then you're here in studio. And then, of course, I spent the last two weeks in your life reading this book. You've consumed my life, mate.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
It's been fun and sad.
Yeah.
An amazing story. But in short, just to get us warmed up, please share with our followers who Antonio Iozzo is. Where were you born? Where did you grow up? Where you went to school?
So I was born in Kensington,
yeah,
in the East Rand in Johannesburg. My dad was a shop fitter before he got sick with multiple sclerosis. I went to school first at Sacred Heart College, then Leicester Road Primary School, and then to JP Boys, where I didn't matriculate, but that's where I ended. Yeah, we started off, our family, I think, was quite well off when my dad had his own business. Once he was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis when I was 12 years old, and he had to stop working, life changed quite dramatically financially for the family. And I ended up getting a job as a pizza man when I was 15 years old, making pizza in a restaurant in Kensington. And I started off there. I ended up going to hotel school when I left JP Boys in Standard 9. I qualified as a chef. Once I qualified, my mom took all her pension and took extra money on the bond on the house. And we opened up a restaurant in Cresta called Amici Trattoria. Unfortunately, within 9 months, we went under. I ended up having the bouncers from the bottle store come and beat me up because we couldn't pay them. The sheriff came to attach the furniture at the house. My mom ended up losing the house. And then I ended up firstly working at Incredible Connection, doing demonstrations on computers. I then was in a call center for Hyundai. If you took your car to Hyundai for a service, I would phone you up and ask you the 10 special service questions on how your service was.
Yeah.
And then by the off chance, I ended up getting a job at an insurance brokerage. And I knew nothing about insurance, but I knew I didn't want to be working in the call center anymore. And I ended up actually realizing that I was quite a good salesperson. And at our firm, we were one of the first people to actually start phoning out of the Auto Trader. The Auto Trader had just come out. And if you were selling your car in the Auto Trader, chances are I would phone you up and ask you the questions about what car you're getting, what cars your wife got. And I sort of took to sales like a duck to water. 1999, myself, my brother and another friend ended up opening up a brokerage, which later I branched off with an administration company called IUM, and got into construction, got into health and wellness, got back to my love of the restaurant business with a new restaurant that I launched 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's financially and business-wise, it's been a rocky road. I think a lot of risks to get to where I've got to now. But it's been a journey that I wouldn't change.
It's a beautiful story. You know, when somebody quits at Standard 9, we tend to think, was this guy a holdcop or what? But he ends up like you, then we know you're cut out for something else, completely different. Let's get into this book.
Okay.
Let's get into this thing that has kept me captive for a long time. So, you know, you're doing well. You can afford things, especially your expensive hobbies that got you injured, riding expensive bikes at high speed, which is away from the nonsense, right? Let's get away from the nonsense and say, how did this accident happen? You know, I read about it, right? I read about how this thing in Cape Town, you get into this bike and you fall. And by the way, this is like you fell off your BMX as a kid. You fell off, you know, you
skiing accidents.
Kyalami, you had your own accident. And I mean, I feel sorry for Nicole. I mean, and we'll speak about it later. But let's talk about this accident that got us here.
I took up superbike racing quite late in life. I had a motorbike when I was 15, a little 80cc. Then when I started making money in the insurance industry working for the brokerage, I bought Kawasaki ZX6. And then if you read the book, you'll realize that I met my wife. She fell pregnant and we got married all within a space of about 7 months.
Yeah.
And I ended up trading the Kawasaki in for a pram. And that was the end of my racing days for many, many years. And I think roughly I got to about the age of 38. And I decided to buy another superbike. And I decided to go to the track and actually learn how to actually ride and race. And I took up superbike racing. I was racing in a series called Battle of the Twins, which is the twin engine bikes.
Yeah.
And I raced Ducati Panigales. And so this was a race in Cape Town at Kilani Racetrack. I had never ridden on this track before. And none of the Joburg races ended up coming down to race at Kilani. I was there with all the Capetonians. So how a race works is you end up having quite a few practice sessions the day before. And then you have a warm-up session just before your race starts. And I'd been struggling to learn the track in the practice sessions, and my warm-up session came, and I still wasn't confident. And the guy that I used to pit with, my racing team partner, he was really good, and he was racing in another series, a higher series than me. And in my warm-up, I asked him to come out and ride in front of me, and just so I could see the lines, the racing lines. It's called the toe. And basically, he got out the pits and he just shot out of there like a bat out of hell. And I was struggling actually just to keep with him to actually see the lines. And as we were approaching, if you know Cape Town, Kilani, it's got a double right onto a really high speed straight. And coming up to this double right, I thought I needed to try and catch him. And so I sped up, but I ended up getting into this corner far too fast, too hot. And I knew I was going to crash and I was going to run off the track. So if you do run off the track and you know you don't want to ever hit the barrier, you hit the front brakes when you get to the gravel and basically your bike will slide out. You'll wash the front end out and 99.9% of the time your bike will go one way and you will go another way. You'll never normally follow each other. This track has got the barrier, which is very close to the track. And I ended up sliding into the barrier. But unfortunately, the bike came right behind me and slid into my back. And that was what actually did all the damage.
Shouldn't at this point, we agree, you and I, that you should not be on anything too weird. I mean, you keep on falling from as a kid, falling off the BMX. I mean,
listen,
you know, when we speak about Kyalami, right? I mean, I read here, you saying to Nicole, oh, please come, it's going to be fun. And the next thing, you're in the back of a Porsche car and been taken to a hospital. Like, mate, it's crazy.
So my personality is that I'm a risk taker. When it comes to sports, I will always participate at the edge of my ability. So whether it's skiing in Austria and being airlifted off the mountain, riding my BMX going over ramps, racing cars around Kyalami, or even playing tennis, I somehow manage to get injured.
So you get injured, you get prescribed these drugs. Do you know anything about them at that time?
Listen, in 2018, I hadn't even heard about Oxy. I knew nothing about the opioid epidemic in the States. I don't think the documentaries were really out yet. And so I knew absolutely nothing about it. I didn't even know it existed.
At which point of the treatment do you start feeling like you're falling into a hole?
So in the Cape Town Milnerton Hospital, I was in ICU for 2 weeks. My painkillers that they gave me were morphine in a drip. I was given Oxynorm, one tablet, 10 milligram tablet every 4 hours. And I was given a pethidine injection every 6 hours. Those are all opioids. If you understand Oxy, within about 4 days, your body...
I don't.
Okay, so with Oxy, within about 4 days, your body already starts to become dependent on it. Within 2 weeks, you are definitely addicted to the drug. And when I left after 2 weeks, I was given 10 boxes, which was a 2-month supply for me to take while I was at home. The time that I realized something wasn't right was when my last box ran out and I started getting the withdrawal symptoms, which I never knew were withdrawal symptoms. So the body aches, the itchiness, the sweating, the depression, and it just got worse. And that's when I started to actually look up, what tablets am I actually on? Why am I feeling this way? And that's when I started to realize, and that's when I actually found out for the first time what oxycodone is.
At that time, you're an addict.
I was already
you're in now.
I was already an addict.
Do you, at this point, talk to someone about it? Do you try to get more to keep yourself alive?
So, no, the first time I decided, my wife went away for a mother-daughter weekend to Cape Town. My son was away racing for the weekend. So the accident happened in the March. And by the July on this weekend, I'd done my research and I saw that the withdrawal time to get off Oxy was between 5 and 7 days. And I decided that over this long weekend, while they were away, I was going to flush all my tablets down the toilet and I would get off this by myself. So I dropped my wife off on the Thursday, flushed the tablets down. By the time Friday came around, I was already starting with the sweats and the body aches. Friday night, the depression started. By Saturday, I was already regretting flushing the tablets down the toilet. By the time Saturday night came, I had a whole plan of how I was going to break into the pharmacy.
When I heard you say this at the launch, I couldn't believe it.
In my head, you are not in control of your own thoughts. I mean, what you think and how you act and how desperate you become for your fix, you will literally do anything. And I was planning on how I was going to break into the pharmacy and how I could get my hands on some tablets. I ended up pushing through. Sunday was bad. And by the time the Monday morning came around, which is now 4 days, by the time Monday evening came, it started subsiding. And I actually ended up getting off. When my wife came back on the Tuesday morning, I ended up telling her that this is what I'd done. She was really upset with me that I never told her and that I did it by myself. But my personality is, firstly, I don't talk a lot and I definitely wasn't going to be sharing that with anybody. And so life continued. I went to work. I still had back pain. But I was very unhappy with the plates. I had a spinal fusion for the first op and they fused me from T5 to T9. So 5 vertebrae were fused. But the South African doctor that operated on me was so scared that I was going to be paralyzed that he ended up setting me in a hunched back position. And I didn't really understand how your spine works and that it's like no other bone in your body. I'd broken my collarbone before racing and you put a plate in. 10 months later, you can take the plate out once the bone had healed. So I phoned him up and I said, listen, how soon can these plates now come out my back? When will my spine be healed? And he said, no later than November, I can come back and have the plates taken out. So in November, I went back. The one thing you need to know is that Oxy is very good for pain. So
yeah,
for pain relief, it works.
And that's the sad part, isn't it?
It really. But in all my investigations to try and find an alternative, what people don't realize is any good painkiller, doesn't matter what it is, whether it's morphine, pethidine, oxycodone, tramadol, they're all a derivative of an opioid. So any good painkiller is a derivative, but Oxy is really, really probably the pinnacle of the painkillers with the addictive nature that it is. So when I went back, I was prescribed Oxy again. And when you're in pain, and especially when you're in back pain, you'll take what the doctor gives you. And I thought, well, you know what? I managed to get off the first time. I'm sure I'll get off again. And so I took it. He removed the plates. And what I soon realized through staff of mine starting to tell me, listen, Antonio, why don't you stand up straight? You're looking hunched over. And I thought I was standing up straight. And when I went for an x-ray on my spine, I realized that my spine had collapsed. And soon realized that your vertebrae never grow. They're the one bone in your body that doesn't grow by itself. So if you crush it and you compress it, it stays in that position.
That's it.
And so because of I had a wedge fracture, my spine just ended up collapsing. And now my muscles were spending more time trying to keep me upright. And so I was back on the Oxy norm, back on the Oxy. When it came time to coming off, I decided I didn't want to go through the withdrawal process. So I ended up going to my GP and I asked them, listen, how do you get me off this? And my GP knew nothing about pain, but phoned a pain specialist and they prescribed me something called Suboxone, which is a little tablet that you stick under your tongue. And within 20 minutes, the withdrawal symptoms are gone and you feel more or less normal. At that stage, I didn't realize that they had just prescribed me another opioid, a different opioid, a long-acting opioid, but a much more powerful opioid. And so I started taking that.
So you're jumping now from opioid the pen to into the fire now.
Yeah, opioid to opioid.
And this happens over how long a period?
So at this point, I was probably just past a year past my accident. So the operation, second operation was in the November, on the pain tablets through November and December. And then roughly in the January, February, I moved over. My doctor prescribed the Suboxone.
You speak about how you then went through a period of terrible sweating. You change your clothes 3 times a day. You avoid people, sit in your office and close yourself out from other people.
So yeah, listen, in the office I had, in order to stay functional, and that was during the time that I was actually trying to stick to my regime of taking one tablet every 4 hours. Oxy is a very fast-acting drug, so it takes roughly 20, 25 minutes to start working, but it really gives you pain relief for about 45 minutes to an hour, and then the withdrawal symptoms would start setting in again for me. So I had in my head was a nice regime going. Take my tablets. As it starts working, I'd open my office door and tell my PA I can see staff. I'd have meetings for about 45 minutes to an hour. I'd then close the door and wait out the next 2 hours or so before I could take my next tablet. I would then start sweating. And when I say sweating, I mean feet, underpants, pants, shirt, you are wet. The depression comes, the body aches come. At the time that I'm now allowed to take my tablet, I take my tablet. As it starts working, I'd go and have a shower, change my clothes, open my door, and I'd start the process again.
You know what bothers me, Antonio, is that people do recreational drugs out there and we see them and, you know, we even sometimes mock them, right? You took drugs to heal yourself, to feel better, to recover. And you didn't realize that you could actually end up the same way as the same guy we see who's taking recreational drugs.
I would say that I was exactly the same as a heroin addict. The one drug is legal and the one is illegal. But the effects are the same. The withdrawal symptoms are the same. And, you know, I mentioned it in the book. I had no empathy for people when they used to tell me they were bipolar. I didn't understand what a chemical imbalance was until I went through it myself. And then you realize happiness is not a choice. Happiness is a chemical. And when it's off in your brain, doesn't matter how much money you got, how healthy your kids are, your family, everything is going well. And you are absolutely depressed.
Yet in that period, you continue to run a successful business. You continue to create stuff that's amazing out there. I don't see how these two go together. What kind of a human being are you?
I would say that that was probably my saving grace. My personality is that when things start going wrong, I take on more responsibility. I do more almost to keep myself occupied. You must know I was in a position where my back was really in a terrible position. In my mind, I thought I'm definitely going to be hunched back for the rest of my life. So you could think, why work so hard? Why have all this money? Your body's in a mess. And the more work I take on, the less time I have to think about the state that I'm in. So for me, it was an escape. Take on more projects, build a bigger building, expand the business, start another business. It's just my personality.
So, How did this affect family? And by the way, I need to say something to you. Thank you for acknowledging Nicole. In fact, this book is as much about Nicole as it is about what you went through. Because I'm sure she carried the brunt of what you were going through.
Nicole, she's the most amazing wife. She was really, really worried about me. But
man, she screamed at hospital staff at some point, like, you know,
the thing is
get off your parts.
The thing is that when you're an addict, it's a really selfish addiction. You really are more worried about yourself and making sure that you've got enough tablets. Lies come easily, hiding the tablets all over the house. She would go and look for them. At points, I would lie and tell her that I'm actually off the tablets when I'm still on the tablets. And she stuck with me through all of it. I did put up a really, really big facade to my staff, to my family. My kids never really knew anything that was happening. So, I mean, when I came home, Nicole would ask me, how was your day? I would say, no, babe, everything was fine, busy day. I wouldn't tell her that I took 40 tablets, changed my clothes 3 times, thought about committing suicide a few times, because that would just make her worry even more. So I kept all of it to myself, to my staff. They wouldn't, my telltale sign would be that they might catch me in a bad mood. And that's really when the depression is now starting to set in, and then you've got a short fuse, short temper.
Talk about the trip to Austria, the holiday.
Yeah. So that was, I really, in my mind, I didn't want to go on that holiday. I was in a terrible spot. I was still on the oxy tablets. I was really trying to taper down. I'd moved from a 10 milligram tablet down to a 5 milligram. I was trying to stick to taking 1 tablet every 4 hours. But it was absolutely killing me in my mind, being able to just the roller coaster ride that was on. Take a tablet, watch the clock, wait 25 minutes. It works. Then I know it's only going to work for so long. Then I know that the sweating, the depression, the body aches are going to come. Now we're on holiday skiing with the family. I'm smiling, coming down to breakfast, but I'm absolutely dying inside. And while on holiday, my tablets actually started working, which was really, really scary. All of a sudden, at least when I took the tablet, the depression would subside. And all of a sudden, it stopped working, and all of a sudden, anxiety arrived. And I'd never, ever suffered from anxiety in my life. And now on holiday, I was waking up at 2 o'clock in the morning. I couldn't lie in the bed. I couldn't sit on the couch. It just felt like something was going to happen, but nothing was going to happen. So I've got anxiety. I've got depression. I was just mentally drained. I came back from that holiday and I was finished.
You know, reading this book, listening to you now for the third time, you have come out of this fairly well compared to many people. At least we know financially you did, because you work hard like a slave to yourself when you're going through trouble. But what would you say broke down? What do you think you lost in this period?
I would say that in this period you lose your happiness. I think I had a very happy-go-lucky attitude towards life. And I think I took my health for granted, like many people do.
Yeah.
I was fairly young. I was in good shape. I trained hard. I ate well. I didn't drink, didn't smoke. And within a split second, your whole life changes. And then it's an uphill road, knowing that your body will never quite be where it was before. And it's continual maintenance to keep it on a path that is sustainable.
What are you doing to be better, to be the old Antonio, who the chef, the young kid who rode a BMX?
So definitely being in a financial situation to be able to afford certain things helps. Having the gym in the building, I'll go to gym 7 days a week for about 3 hours a day. Then three times a week, I've got a bedroom off my office. I've got a physio table in there. My physiotherapist will come three times a week for 2 hours at a time. We'll start off in the gym with specialized back exercises to help stabilize my back extensors and core. And then we'll go upstairs for about an hour, massage, dry needling. So I suffer from intense back spasms. So the actual structure of my back is more or less okay. My spine has still got what's called the kyphosis, which means it's bent over too much.
Yeah.
But my real pain is my muscles that spasm. And so it's that training my back. I know that if I don't keep my muscles strong, late on in life, I'll suffer more.
And was putting out this amazing book part of therapy?
I think it was. I mean, it took me a year to write it.
Yeah.
I really wanted to write it in my own words. So when I got in touch with Melinda, how we did it is that she would fly in from Cape Town. We'd sit for about 3-4 hours and she'd record me, ask me about the accident, about my life. She'd go back to Cape Town, write 2 or 3 chapters. She would send it to me and then I'd rewrite those
in
chapters
your own way, in your own voice.
In my own voice and in my own words. And that's what I really wanted, is that if someone knows me, it would be like I'm talking to you.
Yeah.
And the big reason, there's a couple of reasons why I wrote the book. Some of the big ones are that I really believe that Oxy in South Africa, we are going through the same process that America went through when Oxy was so freely available and was prescribed by doctors for most operations. Last year, my daughter went in for her tonsils. The doctors prescribed her Oxy. One of my attorneys went in for his knee operation. Oxy was the go-to drug. A friend of my son's my son went to St. John's. One of the mothers there fell down her steps at her house. She broke her ankle and she ended up getting plates in her ankle. She was prescribed Oxy. She did the same thing I did in the beginning. She started flagellating her script. She started going to Dis-Chem and Clicks. Within a year, she got blacklisted and she couldn't go to the pharmacies anymore. She ended up going to the street. She ended up becoming a heroin addict. And 4 months later, she overdosed and died. So I just think no one really understands how addictive it is. And number two, if you look at the documentaries that are available on Oxy, it's almost portrayed that Oxy is for the poorer communities. Doesn't really look like if you're wealthy or if you're in an affluent community that this drug can get you. And it really doesn't discriminate. It will catch anybody in any time.
Well, I can tell you personally, I'm glad you wrote the book. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, this book, as we speak, is the international bestseller in 3 categories in the United States and Australia, including personal transformation and spirituality in the United States, business office skills and drug dependency and recovery in Australia. The book also achieved 9 number one spot hot new release categories in the USA and Australia. Mate, did you think about this?
No.
You were just exhaling, right? You were just sharing your story and hoping to save the next person, the next thing.
The main reason was, if you read the book, it's a step-by-step guide on how to get off Oxy.
It is.
And if that book finds its way to 1 or 2 people that find themselves in the dark place that I was, where when you're in that place, suicide really does seem like a good option. If you read this book, it gives you a step-by-step guide on how to get off. It's not an easy path, but what I also found out is that the rehabs in South Africa end up putting you back on another opioid. So the Suboxone that I was prescribed by my doctor is the same drug that a rehab will put you on. So when you go in for heroin addiction or oxy addiction, and someone comes out and they tell you that they are now clean, most of the time what they don't tell you is that they're either on methadone or they're on Suboxone or they're on buprenorphine. These are all opioids. And so you just get transferred from one drug to another drug. And you end up being a hamster and you're just on this wheel. So I ended up trying to really figure out, how do I get off?
So you're now an international best-selling author. What's next?
I'll take it as
a book on Nicole. A book on how to choose a good wife.
How to choose it, yes. I mean, if you read the story, you'll see how quickly we ended up hooking up and staying together. And I think it's a real testament that you don't really need to be dating someone for a long time. I think marriage can work as long as both parties want to make it work. I think nowadays it's too easy to, if things start going badly, it's easy to get divorced. You know, it's being able to stick through the hard times and the good times.
Antonio Iozzo, businessman, drug survivor. I have to say this because it's so important. Author of Slaying the Dragon. Thank you very much, mate, for coming in. Thank you for sharing your story.
It's an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much, Rams, for having me. It was really great.
Love your work.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Taking the Rams by the Horns. Download the My Sowetan app and listen to more of my podcasts. We are also on Spotify. Follow us on X at Rams by the Horns and at Sowetan Live. Please send your comments to me via email on rams@ramsmabote.com. Let me know what you think of the podcast. Or better still, let me be your MC, keynote speaker, or facilitator at your next event. It is the only thing I can do better than satire and sarcasm. From me, Rams Mabote, good night and God bless.